I don't think B2B is as boring as people say it is. I think people are just bored in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of B2C content is just as boring, but because they're not selling software, they can kind of get away with it. And I think people use the B2B is boring thing as an excuse to not think outside the box.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Jonathan Gandolf here, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Brianna Doe, somebody who we've had the great pleasure of working alongside of a few times, we're big fans of. So I'm going to try not to fan out too much here, but I'm excited to learn from her, learn a little bit about her journey and what she's seeing kind of in the influencer marketing space and how that's evolving, all things LinkedIn. We're going to dig into it all, but before I do that, why don't I stop rambling? Brianna, why don't you introduce yourself in your own words? Tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to now.
Well, thanks for having me. And if it makes you feel better, the fangirling is mutual. So happy to be here. But yeah, I'm Brianna Doe, founder and CEO of Verbatim. We are an influencer marketing agency / content studio. So we partner with brands, create content for brands, and then also build influencer marketing programs for them. I'm also a keynote speaker, host a podcast called Stop the Scroll with a new show launching this summer. And then I also write. I have a book coming out. So I do all the things. And then, like you mentioned about LinkedIn, I also create content on LinkedIn, have for about 2 or 3 years.
Very cool. I'm excited for that book. I didn't know you had that in the works. You're staying busy, it sounds like.
I really am. Apparently, I don't like sleep. So
That's fair. Well, this is the Content Cocktail Hour, so we always like to ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Okay, so my default is always going to be an old-fashioned, but right now I'm really enjoying a homemade margarita. My friend Bridget Putker got me into them, and so I can no longer use margarita mix. I make them from scratch.
Bridget can't be trusted. She's a bad influence sometimes.
She really is.
I've been out in the Chicago bar scene 2 or 3 times too many late at night with her. What's the secret to your homemade margarita?
Squeeze the limes yourself and add more agave syrup than you think and less triple sec than you think.
What's the lime per margarita ratio? To me, that seems like there has to be a lot of limes, like the juice worth the squeeze, quite literally.
You would think. Yeah. So it's typically, okay, so I do 2 shots tequila, 1 1/3 shot of lime juice, and then 1 shot of triple sec, and I just kind of pour in agave syrup until the wind tells me to stop.
So. Love that. All right. Well, let's jump into the influencer marketing and margarita topic here. You mentioned your background a little bit. You kind of very organically. Maybe it wasn't as organic as it looked from the outside. Maybe it was a very intentional path you went down, but would love to just hear a little bit about your own journey kind of becoming an influencer in the space. And then I think let's dive into from there kind of what you're seeing currently in the space. But first, let's kind of talk about your journey into it.
Yeah, well, it was as organic as those journeys come, I guess, because for context, I've been in marketing for about 12 years. Mainly worked in startups. So I was doing a lot of roles at once, but a lot of it was influencer marketing. So I was always on the brand side of it. Never once considered like creating content myself, partnering with brands, stuff like that. I was on LinkedIn for years. Like I made my account in, you know, college, like we all do, and then just kind of used it when I needed a job. And then I just started staying on there longer and longer. Like over the past couple of years, I realized, okay, like people are creating content on here. They're talking about their work, about what they're learning. And it was never something that I considered to be like a traditional social media platform. But it really got me thinking, like, is there anything that I want to share? You know, I've spent so long creating content for brands and like leveraging the brand voice. Like, what is my voice? What do I want to share? And so when I first started posting, there were no goals, like there were no objectives. I really just wanted to kind of treat it like a professional journal, for lack of a better term, and start processing like my career journey, network with people, connect with people, like shift perspectives, shift my own perspectives, things like that. And it's taken on a life of its own in the best of ways.
I love that. And I love that you called Verbatim a influencer marketing agency and content studio. So many B2B brands right now are just starting into the influencer world, maybe considering the influencer world. How much of a brand's kind of B2B content strategy right now should be made up of the influencer marketing kind of pillar, if you will?
That's a good question. A lot of it's going to depend on the stage of your company, your budget, and when we lean into budget, like how much you can comfortably allocate to what would be a new channel for your brand. So for some companies, you know, they're very early stage, their main focus would be brand awareness, but maybe they don't have the budget to comfortably spend just on brand awareness. They need to focus on conversions and leads. Maybe this isn't the right time for influencer marketing, or it's a good time to find more organic ways to partner with creators, right? Or just show up at events that creators are going to be at and kind of get that, you know, organic attention or awareness. But if you're in a position where you can allocate, I would say at least bare minimum, like $5,000 or $6,000 per month or per campaign to influencers, it's a good way to get your feet wet. You don't need to partner with the largest influencers in the space right off the bat. Like you can do a low lift campaign, let's call it like a pilot program, partner with a few smaller influencers, understand what works, what doesn't, and then build from there.
I appreciate you actually mentioning the like dollar amount there. I can tell you a little bit about our own journey at The Juice, which is now Audience Plus. You know, we've got a consumer audience that we've grown from zero to 100,000 now. And people always ask, like, how did you do that, right? And in the early days, we spent some on social. We did some like newsletter sponsorships. And then we really found the like newsletters with the influencers, the built-in audience attached. You know, I think sometimes people see influencers or they're unfamiliar with influencer marketing and they think it's extraordinarily expensive, right? Or cost prohibitive. But I actually, like, we found it to be way more cost efficient than social. I think, you know, the social advertising world, I see the numbers around $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to really move the needle on just traditional paid advertising. But with the right influencers, the right niche, the right partnerships, the right activations, it can be way more cost efficient than maybe traditional paid marketing. So I really appreciate you mentioning the price point there and being transparent on that.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think the thing with, you know, paid social too is we're just so saturated with content and you're competing against so many other brands for the same ad space. With influencers, like, there is still value, to be clear, in paid social. I recommend it to clients all the time, but like when you partner with creators, you're getting right to their audience and you're speaking directly to them, which I think is becoming just more and more valuable.
I don't know if this is a trick question. I don't mean for it to be, but you mentioned this a little bit in your previous answer about like investing in brand versus demand. Does influencer marketing and the projects that you work on traditionally sit more in the brand and the awareness side of the marketing house or the demand and the lead gen side of the house?
Ooh. So not a trick question. Very good question. It's kind of 50-50. So the way we approach it is typically, and what I'd recommend to any brand that's considering this, is to have your primary goals or KPIs and your secondary. So for some companies, okay, our primary goal or KPI is going to be lead gen or book demos or trial signups, you know, whatever the case may be. Our secondary one is going to be like impressions, engagement, stuff like that. For other brands, it's going to be the reverse. And it kind of goes back to what I mentioned about it, just depending on like the stage of your company, how much you can comfortably allocate and, you know, how you're measuring success. What I find more often than not, which I think is just an area of opportunity for B2B brands, is that they'll want to keep a very small budget and focus just on demand and lead gen. But what you're going to end up doing is partnering with a creator for one or two posts or one or two newsletter sponsorships and then get upset when you're not seeing, you know, 100,000 leads come in, right? And so it's kind of a balancing act there. But the brands that we work with that are open to longer term partnerships with creators and comfortable investing in them and letting the creator invest their time in the brand as well, they're the ones that can, in my opinion, focus more on demand.
We see that even when people buy software, right? They'll say they're purchasing because of brand awareness, and then it comes up on renewal time and they're trying to justify it based on lead generation, right? And you're like, wait a second. Right. I just think it's such a classic like marketing dilemma. And I think a lot of time, even the marketers that are trying to figure that out, like the pressure's not they're not the creator of that kind of internal strife, if you will. It's coming top down or from, you know, a different department or something like that. So I feel for marketers trying to balance both, but that's a familiar story to us as well.
Yeah.
What about brands? So we've kind of hit on this a little bit, but a little bit of a new space, emerging space. I mean, I think it's here now, and I think most marketers would agree with that. Maybe a marketer that's listening to this, their brand hasn't yet started into the influencer marketing space, maybe knows they should be or is thinking about it. What recommendations would you have for somebody who's maybe building the business case internally to invest in influencer marketing?
Yeah, I find this to be the case very often, especially because like you said, it's essentially still, I would still consider it brand new to B2B, even though it's you know, been ramping up for a couple of years. It's new to most brands. So back to what I alluded to earlier, if you can, start with pitching a pilot program. Don't try and pitch a 6-month, like 50K influencer program. Start with something small, identify some micro influencers. So maybe like 10,000, 5,000 to 15,000 followers that have really highly targeted or specific audiences that align with your ICP, and see if there are ways that you can partner with them. That's one thing. Now, if we have to take a couple steps back and build the business case for that, I would start with internal influencers if you can. So is there anybody within your company or you as the marketer who's creating content online, who has seen the reach that they can get, the leads that have come from social or from the internet? That's always good information as well, even if it's not directly tied to like an influencer program that you're building. Anything that you can show the higher ups or the leadership team to say, you know, like, yes, paid social works, so does this, but influence marketing could be a good channel for us as well. And then one thing I'm noticing as well, there's not a lot of standardization in this space for B2B. There's a lot more for D2C, but we are starting to see more case studies from B2B brands that are doing this well. So maybe I would also recommend speaking to marketers that are doing it. One company that's doing it well is Nevatic. Another one is Clay. Like, they're building out much larger programs, but they had to start somewhere. And so kind of learning from other brands, seeing what you can apply to the own business case that you're trying to build for your leadership team could be useful.
There was a lot there that I really like. That 5,000 to 15,000 followers is actually smaller than I would have anticipated. I think that also goes with the budget number. Like, and I think maybe that's what I'm like taking away from this is like, you can really experiment with influencer marketing like very cost effectively. Like, it doesn't have to be this big, scary, like you said, 50K project or 6 month long initiative. There's ways to experiment in a smaller fashion. I want to come back to the internal influencers point that you mentioned, because I'm really intrigued by that. But just real quickly, you mentioned kind of emerging in the B2B, some of the budget numbers. Is there tooling? Like, is there any standardization with like how this is managed, or like any resources that make this easier for somebody who's just getting into it that they should be checking out?
Yeah. So if you are specifically looking at LinkedIn influencer marketing, which I know a lot of B2B brands are, a lot of the traditional influencer marketing platforms or software does not have like a LinkedIn integration, which is a huge miss, just saying. But
I hope you're listening, great. LinkedIn.
Right. Like, it's a huge miss. It's a big opportunity. Yeah. But one that's doing this very well for LinkedIn is Limelight. So if you don't know about Limelight or David Walsh, definitely check that out. I think like you can manage your entire campaign in there, invoicing, contracting, finding creators, stuff like that. So that's a great tool. But if you're looking outside of LinkedIn, so some B2B brands are doing that as well, and I'd also recommend that. Grin is a great one. Aspire, impact.com is amazing, especially if you want to have like an affiliate marketing angle to it.
Very cool. Appreciate that. I've heard a lot of good things about Limelight. That's one that we've kind of checked out ourselves. So cool. Well, okay. So now going back to that internal influencers point, I feel like this is like, I've heard the employee advocacy, like internal marketing, like I feel like even sometimes PR and comms and even sometimes like HR, like kind of falls into this bucket of like arming the internal employees. And I think internal marketing is one of those things that's maybe underappreciated and, you know, often overlooked, but when done well, it can be really powerful. But the internal influencers, we just had somebody on the podcast last week who was talking about, you know, the corporate brand page, like that doesn't really carry much weight anymore, but it is those internal influencers who kind of create this groundswell for your entire brand. Maybe just talk about that as like a flavor of influencer marketing. It's the first I've kind of like had that light bulb go off of that is influencer marketing. It's just internal. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah. I mean, I agree on the corporate brand point. Unless you're like a HubSpot or a Wendy's, it's pretty hard to build like an audience or community for a company page. There are pros and cons to like the internal influencer approach. On one hand, you have folks that are working in the company, they're internal, right? They can speak to what they're learning, to product features, developments, and people can start to connect them with a brand in a way that feels a lot more personal and human instead of just coming from a company page. There are also cons though, right? First of all, people leave companies all the time. Yep. If anything goes wrong, if there are layoffs, you can't control necessarily, you know, like external perspectives at that point. And then also people might not want to be just associated with the company that they're at. If they're building a personal brand or creating content online, I mean, to be fair, I would recommend not like cementing yourself or assigning yourself directly to that company all the time. So I think when you think about internal influencers, the higher up you can go, the better. Like the CEO, anybody in the C-suite is 9 times out of 10 going to be more invested than, you know, the average employee. They're in it for the long haul. Founder, co-founder, things like that, that's going to be, you know, cream of the crop. The people that are the most invested, have the most insight into the company, have been there the longest, and can just be associated directly with that brand, you know, for an indefinite amount of time is definitely ideal. And what you're doing there is you are, one, you're not working with external influencers or creators who aren't going to have that in-depth knowledge, right? But you're also able to kind of walk alongside that founder or that CEO as they're building in public and understand what they're building, why it matters, and you can connect with them in a way that's just a lot more, like I said, a lot more human and personal.
Yeah, I love that. It's almost like just like culture as much as anything, like creating an environment where people are excited to share what they're working on, what they're building. Like, you know, I think we've all seen, and this used to like work, I think, and you see it maybe occasionally now, but like the copy and paste that, you know, all 400 employees do, and it's like the same post over and over again in your feed. I think for the most part, we've moved away from that, thank God. But you're right. You do also, unfortunately, see the influencers who are moving roles, moving companies. So there is a balance to it all. But if you have that culture and you've built something cool, hopefully your employees feel empowered and maybe educated enough to represent the company or speak kind of in that influencer voice on LinkedIn. It's really cool. I'd love to learn a little bit about your own journey to Verbatim, like this kind of like this betting on yourself. I always love talking to other entrepreneurs. For maybe somebody who's either thinking about jumping into the influencer space and doing that full time themselves or starting their own business in this B2B marketing space, what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I always knew to some extent that I wanted to work for myself. But if we rewind like 10 years, I kept telling myself, I have to wait until I'm a VP or a CMO. Like before that, nobody will take me seriously. I can't go out on my own before that, which is just not true. Also, I got to the director role and I was like, I got to get out of here. I'm ready to start a business and, to your point, bet on myself. And so with that in mind, that's actually the first thing I would say is if that is what's holding you back, it's a balancing act. Like there is so much value in working in-house. You learn so much about leadership, managing up, even owning like the work that you do and being more of an intrapreneur. So I wouldn't give up that time, those 10 years that I spent for anything. And I do think it's important to be intentional about the time that you spend in-house as well. Like what are your goals within your roles? Are you trying to get promoted? Are you trying to learn as much as you can about the specialty? Are you trying to learn as much as you can about managing a business? Like understand what you're leaning towards, what you're growing towards, and that will really guide your time so that when you are ready to go out on your own, one, you don't have to rush into it because you see what goes into it and you can prepare yourself. And hopefully you've been intentional about that time that you spent in-house. And so you've built up a bit of a network that can support you, right, as you start to build your business. You know, I know for some people, they start businesses because, especially in this market, you kind of have to. Like, you get laid off or you get let go, and you just have to find a way to generate income. For folks that have the privilege of kind of taking their time, take advantage of that time. Like, I spent a solid 3 to 4 months planning out the business, fully understanding that it might shift, but planning out the business, mapping out my finances, you know, kind of laying the foundation with my network. It's like to see if there are any leads that I could already start chatting with. Don't be scared to take your time with it and to build something that isn't 100% ready, because it never will be, but at least is at a point where you can comfortably step out on your own. I see a lot of people who think, you know, working for yourself looks really fun and cool, and so they jump into it. And it is fun and it is cool. It's also a lot of work. And now you have to make your own money. So I think understanding what you're taking on and preparing yourself as much as you can is crucial. Final thing I'll say, because I feel like I'm rambling, but final thing I'll say, if you are not creating content on LinkedIn and you want to start a business, the best place to create content is on that platform. Yeah. Like your, you know, depending on what your business is, your business model, your customers are there, your clients are there, your network is there. Like there's such a community on LinkedIn that you can leverage and connect with and learn from. And I'm very grateful for the fact that I poured so much time into LinkedIn for years before I launched Verbatim, because I don't do any outbound. Like everything comes through LinkedIn and word of mouth, which has been incredible.
Yeah, you mentioned the whole like working for yourself thing. Like looks cool, is fun,
yeah,
all those things. I had, when I was considering my own journey, I talked to actually one of my former managers who had started his own business. And he's awesome. He's one of my favorite people ever. But he told me, you know, the actual work, like, isn't any harder or more difficult or challenging than what you do. But there's an emotional burden that you carry that's far greater than being in-house somewhere. And it's like, it's that layered on top of the hard work that really becomes, like, the challenge in it all. And that was kind of eye-opening to me, because that's always my encouragement and other to entrepreneurs. That I'm like, if you're in a director level role or even just a company that's growing, or like most of us, if we're working hard in the space and having some level of success, like your job is difficult, and like the entrepreneur job isn't maybe any more difficult. It's still a ton of hard work. It's different work, but I think it's, you're layering on that emotional side of it as well. And I also love how you spoke about network. I think that's like a huge thing. Like, we all obviously have our professional networks, but you don't want to just like use your network when you need it, right? Like, you need to be laying that foundation. Like you mentioned, LinkedIn's obviously a great place to do that, but make sure you're like giving back to your network before you need something from them. You know, take on the side projects, offer the advice, pick up the coffee, pick up the lunch, like whatever that may be. Like, I think I've erred on that sometimes where it's like, oh, shit, I need something, like, I'll go ask this person. I realize, like, I haven't talked to them in 2 years, and now, you know, like, so I think that's something, too. Like, if you do think the entrepreneurial journey is one you might go down, make sure you're staying consistent in your network and not just using them when you need it.
That's a very good point. And I think it's easy to kind of fall into that trap of just asking for stuff when you need it and then disappearing once you get it, in some cases. So investing in those is crucial.
Love that. Well, we always end these conversations by asking, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
I don't know if this is spicy or not. I don't think B2B is as boring as people say it is. I think people are just bored in general. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of B2C content is just as boring, but because they're not selling software, they can kind of get away with it. And I think people use the B2B is boring thing as an excuse to not think outside the box. But when it comes to influence marketing, for example, it can be just as cool as what you're seeing with B2C. You just have to be willing to kind of be the first to do it. And with any other thing too, even paid social, like, you don't have to post the same kind of graphics that you see your competitors doing. You can be creative and innovative. And I think framing it in the lens or the angle of, my audience is already bored. Like, we're bored with content. We're oversaturated with content as consumers. So B2B brands, like, how can we step up and be more interesting?
Yeah, it's kind of like a straw man argument we've built for ourselves of like, B2B is boring, so I'm going to be boring. I can tell you, when we started The Juice, like, people would be like, why did you name the business The Juice? I'm like, this is exactly why. Like, I wanted it to stand out, and I wanted somebody to ask and like think like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, and we're totally okay with that. And yeah, it doesn't have to be boring. We're all the same people that are buying from the exciting B2C ads or sometimes the boring B2C ads, as you mentioned,
right,
as well.
So exactly. And I love the name The Juice, by the way.
Thanks. Cool. Appreciate that. Well, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Verbatim, what's the best way to do that?
LinkedIn. I should probably be paying them rent because I basically live on there, but you can find me on LinkedIn. Or if you're interested in Verbatim, we are verbatim.com.
We'll get those links in the show notes. We'll get the margarita recipe in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining another episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.